are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, today we're talking about childhood OCD. We're going to be looking at signs and early intervention. Children can experience OCD too, right? And often in ways that are hard to recognize. Without the right understanding, their symptoms might be dismissed as quirky habits or bad behavior. So today we want to look at the early signs of OCD in children and the importance of early diagnosis and, of course, how timely intervention can actually make all the difference. And so we're joined once again by Dr. Jerry Bezuidenhout from the Vista Clinic. Good morning, Doc. Welcome to the Mid-Morning Empowerment.
Good morning, Bongi.
Thank you for joining us once again. I hope you had a good weekend.
Yes, very nice. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Very productive.
Lovely. Happy to hear that. All right. So we're looking at childhood, early intervention, the childhood OCD. What are some of the behaviors that might indicate OCD in a child?
Okay. Bongi, OCD often begins between the age of 7 and 12. So when it does occur, it's quite common in childhood.
Okay.
It's not common, but it, you know, that's where it often happens. Mm-hmm. And a child's behavior is much more explicit than an adult's behavior. They tend to be more open about the behavior because they don't realize it.
Okay.
And if we break it down into two pieces, the one is the intrusive thoughts, mm-hmm. and the other part is the compulsion. So with the intrusive thoughts is that the child's anxiety is different than other child's anxiety. You know, a normal child's anxiety is about friends. It's about playing games and being included or not included and going to, you know, this one's party and where they're going to do something. It's very social. So with OCD, it's very unrealistic fears and anxiety. It, again, it comes back to contamination. Maybe fear about a parent dying out of context. And so that, you know, the fear doesn't fit the normal pattern of children.
Right.
It can be cleaning, it can be checking, it can be counting. They have to do it over and over again. And again, they can also have that images of harming other people, harming themselves, or even sexual images mm-hmm. that are, again, not pleasurable.
Yeah.
They don't, you know, they don't create that pleasure. And then the compulsions, the children tend to want to check things a lot. They want to, you know, for a seven-year-old to check the doors regularly.
Okay.
Their routine can be excessive, either the morning or the evening routines. They can also have where they do body checking or where they touch a certain part of the body in a certain in a stereotypical way, mm-hmm. Which is often different than adults. And then they can often demand that the family be involved in their sort of compulsions.
Right.
And that's an interesting one, you know. Everybody has to check or everybody has to wash their hands quite often. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, the insight is not that good. And therefore, they want the parents and the other siblings to be part of that compulsive behavior that they have.
Right.
And if they don't get that cooperation, they tend to be quite upset about it.
Mm. And I suppose that's where
it
comes in the idea that, you know, we might dismiss these as just bad habits or bad behavior. It's just a bad child.
Yes. I think it's important to, again, come back to the same thing. It does the OCD actions and thoughts doesn't give pleasure.
Right.
So if a child has got a ritual, they know they've got a specific bedtime ritual or they've got specific things that they want to sort of do in a certain way, it gives them pleasure, it gives security. With OCD, you don't get that. Mm. And that's very important because all the children do have tend to have some sort of a compulsion where they do certain things in a certain way. It's their way of developing and making sense of the world. But again, it brings pleasure, brings containment. OCD doesn't bring pleasure, doesn't bring containment. Yeah.
Sure. And how does it differ from adult OCD?
Well, the big thing is that children don't tend to have insight.
Right.
They don't understand what they're experiencing is abnormal.
Okay.
And that's why also they tend to want to bring the family into their sort of compulsions because they think it's normal. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's more difficult for them to understand what's happening. But remember, child is also more concrete in their thinking. So it's much easier for them to pull it back to them as a bad child if they've got some bad imagery or bad thoughts that run around in their thought. And then children often have other psychiatric conditions associated with it. Either anxiety, ADHD, or depression. So when and a tic disorder. So there's often other stuff, because the earlier something begins, the more likely it is that there's sort of a physical or a genetic abnormality that's the main cause of it. And therefore, you've got a more vulnerable brain. So it's important to differentiate and to understand that you have to look for other conditions as well at the same time. And then the big difference is how you treat them. You know, it's going to be different because you treat a child differently to an adult because of dependence and independence.
Right.
So a child is much is more dependent and is much more part of a system, whereas an adult is part of a system, but they can function independently within that system, and they've got more say and control in the system.
Yeah. All right. Interesting.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Now, why is it crucial then to address OCD early in a child's development? What is it? What are the benefits of identifying the signs early and actually addressing them?
You name it, development. So when a child goes through development, they're making sense of the world. They're learning. They're learning about themselves, and if a big part of their behavior is driven by illness,
okay,
that becomes part of their normality and their sort of way of looking at themselves. And they therefore develop abnormal habits or illness habits and illness belief systems around themselves and the world. And it takes them, and remember, OCD causes a dysfunction. So you're not functioning properly in all spheres of your life. Because this child will, wash hands all the time rather than go and play. And all of that has that negative impact on a child's development.
Right.
And the kids are very sharp. They pick up very quickly that someone is behaving abnormally. And they often would then avoid that child and not want to socialize with him. And then you can also think that, a child will bring the family into their compulsions. They're also very likely to bring friends into the compulsions. And then being very upset and throwing tantrums when the other children don't want to behave in the way they do. Or they want them to. So it really, the child develops an illness perspective on life, which is not great.
Right, exactly.
And again, remember, it's the illness in the brain.
Yeah.
So, the chance of developing anxiety and depression is higher. Feeling of rejection. So the whole sort of self-concept gets developed with an illness focus in it, which is not healthy. So the earlier you can help a child identify that they've got an illness and you can treat it properly, the better for the child and for the family. I often hear people saying, but we want to avoid treatment as long as possible and keep it as normal as possible. And the sad thing is the child has already got an illness.
Yeah.
So you can't keep it normal. You have to treat the illness for the child's benefit.
Exactly. Especially if, as you're saying, because of the fact that, as children, they don't have that, they don't have the filter. They, at this point, I'm assuming it's probably easier to identify in a child because of the fact that it's harder for them to hide stuff because they don't know that it's not normal. So it's easier to identify it. It's easier to deal with it when they're still young before they start hiding.
Yeah, very much so. And it's very much, the more intelligent child will know there's something abnormal and they will tend to hide it, but you're totally right.
Okay.
There's a naivety in children that, it's okay to show whatever's going on.
Right.
And they'll also talk about and be distressed about the imagery or the thoughts that they have. And again, that comes back to good family life.
Okay.
If you have a good family life, you're more likely, and you know your child, you involve your child's life, you're more likely to pick up abnormalities much earlier than not. School might pick it up.
And I suppose the child also feels safer if it's a healthy, safe family. The child will feel safer to be open about whatever they might be going through or their intrusive thoughts.
Yes, because you've already got that trust platform that you're working from.
Sure.
Which is very, very, very healthy and it's very safe.
Yeah, it can be, it must be frightening though for the family, right? If you're thinking about, you know, will the rest of society understand that my child is ill, or are they going to just pass judgment on my child for what they, you know, because they don't know or they don't understand, maybe not educated on OCD. It must be frightening for the family and frustrating, like how, you know, you can't hide your child forever. So how do they, how does a family raising a child with OCD who's having these thoughts and whose behavior might be deemed, you know, inappropriate or just downright bad or naughty or whatever, how do you guide your child to just live a normal life?
I think with lots of patience for yourself and for your child and for the people around you. So you don't want to, you know, you pick your fight. You pick one issue and you work at that until that's settled, and then you take the next one. Good relationships with between the parents, the children, and the teachers are crucial. Because a good teacher that understands can help and support a child and protect the child, at, you know, while they're at school at the same time. And you know, you bring up an important point there in terms of the parents' sort of, you know, how they react to the illness. It's, and it's interesting, you know, it's their own shame. It's their own sort of disappointment. They struggle to accept or not accept that they've got a child. And it can often be blaming, you know, they blame themselves, you know, for what have we done, you know, how much of this is our cause. And none of those are actually constructive and help the child. So it's parents, I think they're having a space where they can feel sorry for themselves and go and cry and feel guilty, you know, and, but then contain it and then come back and then work with the child and help the child in their best interest. Because often when we can't differentiate between us as parents, our sort of issues and what the child needs, then we tend to place our issues onto the child.
Right. Yeah.
The child might be quite okay at school, you know, they're on the fringes, but they're doing actually okay and they manage their abnormality. But the parents are not managing the child's, the perception of the child's abnormality. You know, they had a dream of having a child that is sort of right and center in the school and doing well and doing sports, and now they've got a child who's different. So that whole perspective about, okay, what's my issues and what's my child's issues and how do we treat them separately, which is very healthy because when you, when I accept that I am struggling with my child's illness, then I can work with that and I can actually tell my child, for me, it's difficult today.
Okay.
And it doesn't, the child doesn't become the main focus of everything in life. I'm allowed to be upset as a parent, even though he's okay or she's okay. And the other way around as well, which is very healthy for the child to see. And to be able to do that, you know, you need some reflection time. You need some stand back time where you can sit and just think a little bit about what's happening, how are you perceiving that. And often, you know, parents need some therapy, different forms of therapy, sometimes just educating themselves, psyche education about the illness and normal development so they can differentiate between the two.
Right.
Because what I often see is people will educate themselves on the illness, but not on normality. So they can't guide their child in a direction, you know, that is normal. And to teach the child, but this is normal behavior, this is normal thinking, and that is illness thinking. So educating about both is very important. And then also for parents to understand they don't have to do everything. They don't have to be everything. They can't really fix things for their child. That's a difficult thing to accept for a parent. You know, you can't fix it. Sometimes you just have to be with it. But the more the parents are with it, you know, the calmer they get with it, the more calmer the child becomes because the parents are the safety net for the child.
Okay. So when your safety net seems to be in control and everything is fine, that gives you that comfort as well.
Yes. Yeah. Because mommy and daddy's okay.
Yeah.
And they say, I'm not well, but I'm okay.
Okay. So what should parents and teachers do if they suspect OCD in a child?
A lot of schools these days have got counselors or psychoeducationists, psychotherapists at the school.
Yeah.
So engaging them is a step. Going to the GP is another step. Mm-hmm. Accessing the pediatrician, if they've got a pediatrician involved, that can be good. And then also, if they've got a very strong suspicion, mm-hmm. then just go for it, you know, a clinical child psychologist or a child psychiatrist. To get more help. The big thing about parents is that, you know, especially mothers that are involved with their children, mm-hmm. they understand their children the best. They know them extremely well. Mm-hmm. And if they've got a strong gut feel that there's something wrong, they must trust themselves and act on that.
Right.
And telling the child if, you know, that we worry there might be an illness. Again, the illness brings something on the outside. It's not the child that's wrong or the child that's doing something bad.
Okay.
There's a cause for it. And it immediately brings some relief to the child as well.
Mm-hmm.
But looking for the help is very important. And the nice thing is these days, the internet is so full of information. It's actually too full. That's the big problem. So we have to sift the information out these days.
Yeah.
But go and read up on OCD. Read up on normal development in your own child, because then you can help your child see what's the difference between what they're experiencing mm-hmm. and what normal sort of children do or non-ill children do. And then they can help their child bridge the gap.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, the better I see the illness and I see normal development, mm-hmm. the more I can grow into normal development and not just try and contain the illness.
Right.
I can do both.
All right. And are there child-friendly treatments that are, you know, are available?
Yes, it's the same as the adults, the cognitive behavioral therapy and the exposure response prevention therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But you need a skilled therapist there to break it down into sort of child-friendly terms and help the child understand
okay.
the kind of cycles, thinking, feeling, behaving cycle. And then why it's happening and what's, you know, why is it not helping?
Right.
And often having to repeat that, you know, quite often, because that's how children learn.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, antidepressants are often indicated in OCD with children because it tends to be a bit more severe. Because remember, the general rule is that the earlier an illness begins, the more biological it is.
Okay.
Physical, and the more you're likely to need medication for that.
Okay.
So using that antidepressants, it works quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well tolerated. And we've got quite a few options these days that we can choose from. And at the same time, also being aware that there are other co-occurring illnesses, mm-hmm. like the ADHD, something else. And if you treat those, again, bring them under control, medication with, you know, helping the child manage themselves differently. The one has a negative impact on the other one.
Okay.
Because you can imagine if you're hyperactive and impulsive, you know, you struggle to think, you struggle to stand still and make plans. And with OCD, you have these kind of intrusive loops that run. And the more loops you have, the negative loop you have, and then you've got an impulsive action behind that, the more likely you are to be compulsive. It's more difficult to block that pathway. But if you've got ADHD and you treat that appropriately with methylphenidate or in one of the other drugs, the child can think, they can engage their own brain, and then the one negativity is contained, and that can have a positive impact on the OCD management.
Okay.
So it's again, a lot of people are fearful of treatment.
Yes.
And I think it's okay to be fearful because it makes you cautious. People need to be careful about this concept. I want to keep it normal.
Yeah.
So once your child has got an illness, it's difficult to keep everything normal. And it actually means something different. Because normal would be, I'm taking my medication so that my illness is under control and therefore I can behave normally or I can think normally.
Right.
So the normality definition changes. So it's again, parents having to enrich their definition of what's normal and what they are doing for their child and how they're helping. And medication can only treat the physical condition. It can't treat behavior. Okay. One of my young patients with ADHD explained it to me very nicely. She was very naughty. Mm-hmm. We treated her with methylphenidate, and after about 6 weeks, she said to me, "Doctor, it's so nice. I can think now. Now I just have to learn not to be so naughty." So to me, it's such a beautiful differentiation between what's going on in terms of the illness in the brain mm-hmm. and then the consequence of behavior.
Behavior, yeah.
Yeah, and then she, you know, you can learn to behave differently.
Yeah.
So it's allowing that grace to be in the, you know, for the child as well.
Yeah.
And again, people put tablets and therapy at the same level as God.
Mm.
And it can't. God is God. Mm. Man made therapy. Right. We thought out therapies. We made tablets. The moment we involved, it's an imperfection. So it can never be at the same level as God. So our therapies and stuff, we don't compete with God. It's a reflection of God's grace and God's healing power, but it's not God.
Sure. That's beautiful. I think I like that because obviously we have a lot of listeners who are Christians and who maybe because of our faith might be, you know, hesitant to consider therapy or medication because they have this idea that, well, if I go that way, that shows that does that mean I don't have faith in God? I don't believe that God can help my child. And so they view it that way, like therapy, going for therapy. I'm putting that equal to God when that's not even the case.
Yes, very much so. And for me, that's the richness of our spiritual thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if I don't have an ill child, I'm not confronted with those kind of complex questions.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I have a sick child, suddenly I'm confronted with other kind of questions that my friends and family aren't, you know, they don't think about it. And that makes it difficult sometimes for us because in a lot of church communities, again, we don't tend to talk about chronic illness with faith
mm-hmm.
and, you know, growing in relationship with God despite having an illness. And how do you integrate the two with each other? You know, and that makes it very often difficult for parents. And again, the blaming, you know, parents. And it's, you know, we never talk about the second child that gets born with our child, you know, the invisible one. We call it guilt.
Okay.
The moment that child is born, every parent becomes guilty. They feel guilty, you know, I've missed this, I've guilty this, I've caused this.
Yeah.
And often people will feel guilty and they want, I've caused this. And then it's because of guilt, they avoid getting the treatment for their child as well. Because I think they need to change and they're not good enough. And that's not true, you know. The amount of times that parents actually are the main cause of an illness is very few and far in between. Mm. And they tend to be very abnormal. And what's interesting, they very seldom worry that they have caused it.
Wow.
And that's not because they're mature in their thinking. It's just because they, you know, other people will tell them that they are a problem.
Yeah.
So the ones that are worried tend not to have caused it.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Doc, once again. Before I let you go, any final thoughts or words that you'd like to share maybe with the parents who are raising a child with OCD or they suspect the child might have OCD? What advice would you have for them?
Work hard to identify the illness, but also work hard to identify your child and help your child grow as a person despite having this illness. And it's a big struggle. You know, we get lost in the illness very quickly, especially if you go to all kinds of specialists and that, you know, all our medical terms.
Yeah.
It's very easy to fall into that trap and then lose your child.
Yeah.
So my advice would be work hard at trying to see your child, you know, the parts of him that or her that's not ill.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Jerry, for coming through once again. And
thank you very much. Have a lovely day, Bonki.
All right.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.